Well, hello, friends. Mark DiMatteo coming at you with another new message going out to our Great Questions group. And folks, this is message number 39. Title is Considering Space Part 4. And here again, we're still contemplating confinement, but this time we're going to be considering the condition of being normal space bound. Okay? And as we get started, let me just quickly say a welcome to those of you that have joined us since our last message. The group continues to grow, and we're excited to have each and every one of y'all. And any of you that may be listening to these messages that have been passed on to you by somebody else, I always let everybody know that they're welcome to share these. So any of you that are listening to this message from wherever, whenever, you're welcome to be with us. And let me remind you also, especially if you're new, that my previous audios are all available and posted on my website, which is markdematteo.com. I'll spell it for you real quick, markdematteo.com. Okay, so let's get rolling because I'm excited about, as always, bringing a new message to you. And folks, one of the intriguing outcomes of my considering the condition of being confined in space on a grand level, which is what we did last time, was that I then began to gain a new awareness of the reality that the same condition exists even in the relatively small amount of space that surrounds us here on Earth. So in this message, we are now going to turn our attention from outer space to what we might call normal space, the space you and I exist in during our everyday lives. We are going to consider some familiar realities which we are all well aware of, but do so in the context of confinement. And as we do, perhaps you will gain a fresh perspective, as I did, regarding just how normal space-bound we really are, too. So, here we go. To begin with, in the world in which we live, most of us need or want to be able to move around, at least to a certain degree. For the vast majority of us, everything we have to do or would like to do is usually not present within the space which immediately surrounds us. For instance, things like work and shopping, children's activities, education, health and wellness, recreation and leisure, family and friends, religious and community activities, and of course, traveling vacations can all often create the need for us to be able to move from one place in space to another, right? This is why we have the whole concept of transportation, for we need to have the capability of conveying ourselves from point A to point B. Now, fortunately, unlike the case of outer space, where we might want to get there but can't, getting to most places in normal space is at least possible. So the issue then is not usually whether or not we can get there, but rather how we go about doing so, for this is where we encounter constraints. Folks, these constraints arise from the fact that if we don't do something, we don't move. And we don't move anywhere, and we'll simply remain right where we're at, bound to the space that we're in. Therefore, we must employ some type of means to move us. So let us quickly consider some of these means, as it is enlightening to do so from this fresh point of view. For starters, we can, of course, walk. This is certainly the oldest form of movement known to man, and with a few exceptions, is usually available to all of us. However, while it is indeed a viable means, I think it is safe to say that it is quite limited, and relying solely on this method alone would substantially limit our degree of movement within normal space. For the reality is that all by ourselves, without any aid, we simply don't get around very well. Therefore, if we want to be able to expand these constraints, we have to face the fact that we need assistance. We must consign ourselves to the reality that we need something else to transport us, to literally haul us around from one place in space to another. Interestingly enough, for most of man's history, there were only a limited number of other means available, which were primarily animals, boats and small ships, and various forms of wagons and chariots. Furthermore, I think it is fascinating to reflect on the fact that prior to only the last 200 to 300 years or so, the fastest mode of transportation folks had ever come up with was a horse, right? I mean, I suppose you could go faster if you jumped off a cliff, but that's not always going to get you where you want to go, right? Can you imagine, now think about this, can you imagine your great-grandparents, grandparents, and parents all riding horses, and only riding horses, and you, your kids, and your kids' kids all eventually doing only the same? On one level, the conversation around the kitchen table would always be the same. So, what model horse do you ride, right? Or anywhere else when you're talking to your friends. Folks, maybe the buggies and wagons they pulled gradually changed from one generation to the next. But what pulled them did not, and did not for years and years. In fact, centuries upon centuries. For let us remind ourselves that it has really only been quite recently, essentially in the last few minutes on the clock of history, that the means to travel much farther and faster have become a reality. Best as we can tell, we have approximately 6,000 years of fairly reliable recorded human history. And yet, the first real means of faster than horse transportation, which was the steam locomotive, only showed up a little over 200 years ago. Then the first automobile arrived about 50 years after that, and the first airplane approximately 30 years later. Isn't it incredible to think that prior to December 17th, 1903, when the Wright brothers first flew their fragile little flyer briefly above the beach in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, that there, as best as we can tell, there had never before been an airplane in the sky in all of human history? And yet today we can travel at well over 600 miles an hour in a jetliner and close to 300 miles an hour in a modern high-speed train. And as a little aside, I can remember a trip I took not too long ago to the United Kingdom. And on the way there, we had a tailwind and we were in a 777 and they had the GPS panels up that most of you are familiar with now. But with that tailwind, we were doing almost 700 miles an hour. We were doing a little over 700 miles an hour sometimes heading east to the UK. It was pretty amazing to actually be able to see that. But anyway, back on course here. And so we talked about trains, we talked about planes, and now regarding our PTDs. You've all heard of PEDs, personal electronic devices. Well, how about a PTD? You know, our personal transportation devices, right? Namely, our cars, vans, trucks, SUVs, motorcycles, and anything else we might want to drive. Most of them can easily go faster than we are legally allowed to run them, or might even want to. And just for fun, especially for those of us that might like to occasionally put the pedal to the metal, I did a little research regarding current posted speed limits around the world and found the following. While most of us here in the U.S. are probably grateful that the speed limit on most interstates is now 70, Texas has recently upped the limit on some of its highways to 85, making it perhaps the fastest posted speed limit in the Western Hemisphere. Go Texas, right? Globally, though, while Poland's Autostrada will allow you to drive 87 miles an hour or 140 kph legally, both Austria and Abu Dhabi get the nod as they both have a 100-mile-an-hour speed limit on some roads. How about that? However, the undisputed high road speed champ is still the German Autobahn. For as most of us already know, it has no posted speed limit. Woohoo, right? I found out that it has a suggested speed limit, but I don't know how many people really abide by that. Anyway, folks, while all this might be fun and perhaps even a little nuts, ultimately, the reason behind all of this is, once again, not only do we want to be able to move, but we also want to be able to move fast, to get where we want to go as quickly as possible. Sure, there's no doubt that sometimes getting there is half the fun, but most of the time we simply want to be there already. right? How many times have you thought, man, I wish I could just blink and be home? And who hasn't heard and perhaps even asked, are we there yet, right? So the reality is, folks, we can still only go so fast, and therefore moving still takes up our time. In fact, quite a bit of it. And as I thought about this, I really began to gain a new perspective on just how much of our lives we spend in some type of vehicle for the sole purpose of hauling ourselves and sometimes others from one place to another and then back again. And yet, as significant as this is, the need for movement requires much more from us than just the expenditure of our time. For consider just for a moment only a few of the additional requirements of transportation just via our PTDs. Of course, to begin with, there's the cost of buying one, but then of registering it, insuring it, fueling it, and maintaining it. And again, I'm just simplifying here. Then there are all the roads that have to be built, not to mention bridges and tunnels and, you know, traffic lights and all the other related paraphernalia that goes on with roads and travel via roads. But they all must be built and maintained to allow us to move about in our PTDs, unless we want to do four-wheeling all the time, right? And then, of course, we must deal with the stress of occasionally getting stuck in traffic. That never happens around the DC area, huh? Inclement weather, or even getting lost, even with a GPS. Not to mention crossing paths with someone who is apparently a nutcase let loose behind the wheel occasionally, right? Bottom line is, folks, we cannot move for free. Rather, it costs us something, and all told, the total can add up to something pretty significant. Now, let me share with you one other interesting dimension to this condition of being normal space bound. It is a limitation that I'm sure all of us have experienced many times over the course of our lives, but once again, I found it illuminating to consider in the context of confinement. Specifically, it deals with the fact that we are limited to being able to be in only one place at a time. This, of course, is rather obvious. But having said that, let me ask you something. Have you ever felt like you wanted to be able to be in more than one place at a time? I'm sure you have. And I'll tell you what, I sure have. In fact, I'd venture that as soon as we start thinking about it, we probably will begin to see many, many instances when we would like to have been able to be in perhaps at least two, if not more, places at the same time. Let me give you just one quick personal example I experienced long ago that I still remember quite vividly. And as I do, I think you will easily relate it to similar events in your own life. Back in the summer of 1980, while my family and I were still living in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, we had the opportunity to take a rather unique trip on which we literally traveled completely around the world. On the whole, it was quite the experience, and I actually kept a daily journal of the entire voyage, which spanned almost 2 months. However, I am only going to briefly refer to the portion that was back here in the U.S., as it will amply illustrate the point I'm referring to. To begin with, even though I was excited about the chance to travel and visit the States, I didn't want to leave all my friends, my dirt bikes, and the other activities I was normally involved with in Jeddah to do so. Rather, I somehow wished that I could go on the trip and stay in Arabia at the same time. But because I knew I couldn't, I found myself experiencing a subtle sense of melancholy, knowing that I would miss most of that summer in Jeddah. Interestingly, I soon found that those feelings would actually only get worse as our journey progressed. When we arrived in the U.S., the first place we visited was here in Virginia, for that is where we lived before we moved overseas. After a number of days reconnecting with all my old friends, I soon found, once again, part of me wanting to stay in Virginia. Also, then we went to Dover, Delaware, and then to the Albany, New York area to visit relatives. And I experienced the same feeling, slightly altered and on different levels, but just as real, and seemingly beginning to pile one on top of the other. Then, when we left New York, the rest of my family was scheduled to fly to Denver, Colorado to see some friends who had previously been our neighbors in Jeddah. However, I had another friend from Saudi who was attending college in Flagstaff, Arizona at the time that I also wanted to see. The dilemma was I also wanted to see the folks in Denver, but I knew I would not be able to do both. So I ended up going to Arizona. And while I had a great time visiting my friend and seeing a part of the U.S. I hadn't been to before, here again, I still wished, somehow, I could have been in Denver at the same time too. Additionally, as an interesting twist, while in Arizona, I unexpectedly ran into another couple who were neighbors of ours in Arabia. Still there in Arabia, but in other words, I knew that they were also scheduled to be back in the States sometime that summer, but I had no idea they would happen to be in Flagstaff at the very same time I was. And even though it was kind of cool running into them, doing so reminded me again that I still wished I could have somehow have also remained in Jeddah, along with every other place I had visited thus far on the trip up to and including now Arizona. For as I prepared to depart Flagstaff to reunite with my family at our next destination, which was San Francisco, I found myself yet once again confronted with a consistent but strengthening group of conflicted feelings and emotions. For though I was always excited about and looked forward to the next leg of the journey, each time I was faced with another departure, I would also experience a profound sense of sadness. I have already referred to it as melancholy. Actually, it is probably a combination of emotions and feelings, ranging from the two I've already mentioned to also a sense of longing and loneliness and even emptiness and loss. As I reflected on this, it really boiled down to the following for me. I lamented the fact that since I was limited to being in only one place at a time, I would miss the experience of living with each group of family or friends that I wanted to be with, and the uniqueness of the environment of where each lived, and wished instead that I could somehow be everywhere with everyone I cared about at the same time, so that to an appropriate degree I would be involved in all their lives and the places they lived, so as to miss nothing. And these are only a few examples, for I'm sure each of you as well could easily recall many instances throughout the course of your lives when you have also experienced similar feelings due to these particular limitations to our present existence. So the bottom line, folks, I began to realize just how normal spacebound I was too. For not only do I inhabit a body that does not move around very well, and therefore needs to be hauled about in some type of a vehicle, additionally, I am confined to only one place at a time, which dramatically limits the scope of my experiences as I go through life. However, there is yet one other, more subtle degree of confinement that we need to consider. It is perhaps even more intriguing, as it deals with the realm of our inner selves. And that's what we're going to examine next time, the reality of being inner space bound. So until then, gang, this is Marcus D signing off and wishing all of you another wonder-filled day. Take care. Bye-bye.